Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
WNYC's Andrea Bernstein and the New York Times' Michael Powell are with us. They've both been watching the Democrats' campaign in Pennsylvania this week. Hi, Andrea. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, Brian. Hi, Michael, again.
Andrea, is this like Iowa in December all over again? 7 weeks devoted mostly to one state, retail campaigning town by town?
It's kind of like Iowa, but without so much of the pressure. It's kind of like, Iowa and Valium.
Do or die for Hillary Clinton, though.
Well,
no?
Sort of everything in this campaign is do or die. I mean, she has to do quite well in Pennsylvania. Yeah, she has to do quite well everywhere. Everything has to fall her way for her to win this nomination.
Yeah. So what do they do at these campaign rallies, Michael? Does Obama shout, yes, we can, and Clinton shout, no, he can't?
Yeah, actually, it's interesting. Obama's very much kind of changed his style in that sense. It really is like Groundhog Day, except now we're back to Iowa or New Hampshire. There's a lot of town hall meetings. I think there's a realization on his part that, especially in order to sort of appeal to a demographic that he sees as very much being in her sweet spot, that is in Hillary's sweet spot, he's got to kind of ground his rhetoric, which he's been trying to do more, sort of, in other words, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this. So there's been less of those kind of exhortational sort of speeches, and much more kind of grounding in the here and now.
Well, what are the this and this and this? Is he getting more specific on policy than before?
Oh, quite a bit more so. Yeah, I mean, he's talked about what, his plans on foreclosure. He's gone quite a bit into the health plan. He's sort of, on the war, he's detailed in sort of great depth, his plans for withdrawal, how you get out without having an imminent an immediate collapse of the government there. So, I mean, again, one could argue all of these details, but certainly one, I think, you'd have trouble arguing, well, that there aren't details now, to his policy position.
And as for Clinton, Andrea?
Well, I mean, all this is kind of funny. Michael and I saw each other this week in Wilkes-Barre, PA, in northeastern Pennsylvania. What was once coal country, then was apparel country, and now, as one person described to me, people are kind of scratching around. And what was so interesting to me is that Obama was sounding like Clinton, giving this sort of hair-splitting, almost boring detail about his policy, and Clinton was sounding more like Obama and, in fact, was being received more like Obama in terms of, sort of the rock star treatment. I mean, I've seen Hillary Clinton in a lot of places, and this is about as popular as I've ever seen her, except for maybe a black church when she was running for Senate in 2000. I mean, she was just packing them in the rope line five deep.
Well, I think they have to, if I could. I mean, I agree with Andrew, and I think that, what this reflects is, in this sense, and keeping in mind that these are two candidates that you could sort of have difficulty slipping a piece of paper between on policy, save for a rather small difference on health care and a rather larger difference in the past on the war. But really, putting those two aside, they're extremely similar. So really what you're finding in a weird way is that they both need to kind of take a move from the other. She needs to show that she can actually inspire people, and he needs to show that he can do what she does so well, which is sort of, if you will, get down in the weeds of policy.
Andrew, you brought some speech clips from each.
Right. And we'll start with Clinton. They were both, as it happens, in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania earlier this week. And they both spoke at colleges. Clinton spoke at King's College and Obama spoke at Wilkes College. They're about a mile from each other. And this first clip is Clinton, and she was speaking at King's College earlier this week.
The average American got maybe $500 from all of George Bush's tax cuts. Energy costs went up $1,000 since he's been president, so we're $500 in the hole. Now, if you're wealthy and you're well connected, you've been taken real good care of. You see, I think it's wrong that a Wall Street money manager making $50 million a year pays a lower percentage of his income in taxes than a nurse, a teacher, or a truck driver making $50,000 a year right here in Wilkes-Barre. I'm going to propose and fight for $100 billion in middle-class tax breaks. Tax breaks that you can use to buy health care for your family, long-term care insurance for yourselves, or for your elderly parent, money you can use that will enable you to send a child to college without going deeply into debt or mortgaging your home. And I'm going to let the tax cuts on the wealthiest of Americans making more than $250,000 a year expire so we can use that money to help middle-class Americans instead.
So about a minute and a half of Hillary Clinton in Wilkes-Barre as we continue to play longer than soundbite speech excerpts from the stump. And we've got about that much of Obama, too. Do you want to set this up?
Well, the Obama speech... I think the thing that Michael said about slipping a piece of paper, I would challenge the listeners to listen for the policy differences in their speech, but also listen to the speaking style. I mean, that was Clinton in her sort of mode that I've seen her when she's sort of happiest and most comfortable. She starts dropping her G's. Listen to Obama
you mean
now.
Dropping her G, like, we're waiting for this.
Exactly. And this
instead
is Obama.
Of relieving the burden on the middle class, we've given tax breaks to companies that ship jobs overseas, tax loopholes to companies that don't need them. We've given tax breaks to the wealthiest Americans who weren't even asking for tax breaks. As a consequence, we've got $1 trillion worth of loopholes carved into our tax code. George Bush has added $4 trillion worth of debt since he came in. The first 42 presidents created $5 trillion worth of debt. The next one, the 43rd, created $4 trillion by himself. That's a mountain of debt that our children and our grandchildren are going to have to pay, $30,000 per man, woman, and child here in America. Instead of enforcing the rules of the road, Washington's turned a blind eye to abusive practices like predatory lending. And we've seen the symbol of the American dream, the American home, turned into a source of insecurity for millions of families. Now, the American people face a clear choice in this election. John McCain, whose service I admire, he's on a biography tour right now, so I want to be clear that most of us know his biography, and it is worthy of admiration. He's a man who's a genuine American hero and has served this country with distinction, but my argument with John McCain is not his biography, it's his policies. Because a few weeks ago he said that, and I'm quoting here, the issue of economics is not something I've understood as well as I should.
So we heard Hillary Clinton in Pennsylvania, Barack Obama in Pennsylvania, and Michael Powell from the New York Times. Might I suggest they sound like running mates?
Yes, I think you could. You might argue even that you'd want a running mate who's a little further apart in policy than those two. I'd be very surprised, I think, if either that and either of them ended up as a running mate with the other. But certainly, you'd be hard put. I think they wouldn't have too many arguments if they were riding on the bus together, at least around policy.
Now, Andrea, I want to play one more clip. And what I'll say is, to set this up, there goes Hillary's red telephone again. But this time, the emergency has nothing to do with national security, and the target is not Barack Obama. Listen to the first Democratic campaign commercial of the general election.
It's 3 a.m., and your children are safe and asleep. But there's a phone ringing in the White House, and this time the crisis is economic. Home foreclosures mounting, markets teetering. John McCain just said the government shouldn't take any real action on the housing crisis. He'd let the phone keep ringing. Hillary Clinton has a plan to protect our homes, create jobs. It's 3 a.m. Time for a president who's ready.
I'm Hillary Clinton, and I approve this message.
Now, I think that's the first attack ad against John McCain specifically that doesn't, you know, just pump up one, that doesn't mention the other Democratic candidate or doesn't seem targeted against the other Democratic candidate per se. Or is it subtly, Andrea?
I feel like it's maybe not, but I'm having trouble putting my hands on what another one might have been. Michael, have you, do you know?
Oh, I think this is the first, I mean, at least that I'm aware of, and I've not done an exhaustive look at this, but I think it's the first one that's really gone after McCain, right? Without,
right.
You know.
And we heard the same content at the end of the speech clip of Obama. Right. Talking about McCain's unreadiness for the economy,
right,
by his own admission.
Right. I mean, they are. I mean, you know, what's interesting is there's been this marked change in tone this week in the Clinton campaign. You know, they have these daily conference calls, which for a while they stopped having every day. Everybody's joking. We're waiting for the 3 a.m. conference call. They were all about Obama.
The reporters will have to initiate that one.
Well, I'm not so sure. They were all about Obama. They were all about Obama this, not ready for this, not ready for that. And then this week, they unveiled this McCain ad, and they really began focusing in on McCain. So that is, you know, pretty smart of Hillary Clinton.
Where is that ad running? Is it in the states yet to hold their primaries?
It's running in Pennsylvania, for sure. I mean, I think that, you know, one of the things about it is, you know, Hillary Clinton was getting hammered for negativity against Obama. So that's a pretty good strategy to go out against that and say that she's running against McCain. She's not attacking him so much. And when I saw her, I didn't hear her attack Obama much either, except to sort of fact check a campaign ad of Obama's that's running in Pennsylvania, where he says he's not taking money from the oil companies. And she points out rightly that no candidate for president is allowed to accept a contribution from a company. So no one is taking money from a company. Both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama have had significant contributions from oil company executives.
But she didn't call anything a fairy tale. So do they have at least three different audiences now, Michael? The voters of the remaining primary states, the nation through the national media, and maybe most important, the superdelegates?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think that they're, well, and maybe even a, if I could, maybe sneak in there a fourth audience, which is each other's supporters, right? I mean, they're all aware that their negatives, that is Hillary and Obama's, or Clinton and Obama's negatives with
right,
supporters of the other candidate have been rising at a kind of scary rate for both of them. And I think
NPR this morning had some scary stats for the Democrats, between 15% and 30% of supporters of each who say that they now may well not vote for the other in November.
Precisely. So I think that what you're seeing is to a certain extent, in a curious way, an effort on the part of both of them, whether subconsciously or consciously, to reassure people that, you know, I'm really not that different. I'm better, of course, for whatever reasons they're going to argue, but we're really not all that different. And the big difference, which is something that Obama keeps saying as well, the big difference is with the Republicans. And in fact, he's even gone so far, the one criticism he'll make of Clinton is on her health care plan, but he's always careful to say it's a good health care plan. You know, we both have good health care plans. They're very similar, but here's the difference. It's an interesting, I think, tonal thing that they're both trying out now.
You know, we're just about out of time, but Andrea, before you go, I actually want to change the topic for a minute. Put on your hat as our local political director, and we won't do much of a congestion pricing countdown segment today with 3 days before the deadline for federal funding. But the reason that we're not going to do much is that it seems to be in the obligatory Sheldon Silver black hole right now, where nobody's doing anything publicly. It's all happening behind closed doors, and it all hangs like the West Side Stadium once upon a time, like lots of things in the interim. It all hangs on Shelley Silver's approval by Monday.
You know, Brian, I was thinking to myself as I came in today, how did Mayor Bloomberg get into this situation again? I don't know if you remember, but sometime in the spring of 2005, there was supposed to be a vote of the Public Authorities Control Board, and I was on a train to Albany when we found out that Shelley Silver wasn't going to even be at that train. He was going to be somewhere in Long Island, and I got off the train, and I went out to Queens or Long Island to hear Shelley Silver say he was going to oppose the West Side Stadium. All eyes were on Sheldon Silver, and here they are again. And, you know, one of the things that's fascinating to me is that I think that Mayor Bloomberg did do quite a few things differently in this congestion pricing campaign, if you will, than he did in the West Side Stadium campaign. He got the support early on of newspaper editorial boards, of good governance groups. He got the support of a number of sort of activist and environmental groups, which he did not really have a coalition in for the West Side Stadium. I mean, there were a lot of unions and there were a lot of people on board, but he really did some organizing. But he never managed to sort of get it beyond the groups and to get there to be what he had hoped there would be, which is a groundswell of support from the populace. This is a mayor who has never really had to organize from the grassroots ever in his life. I mean, he was a businessman. He ran for mayor. And so once again, he finds himself a deadline approaching and Sheldon Silver gets to decide. Now, you know, individual assembly members have a lot of strong feelings about this, so it's not quite the same situation.
Right. So we will see what happens Monday if this is day three of the countdown. Monday is the deadline, so maybe on day zero everything changes. We will find out as we pick up our congestion pricing countdown on Monday. And by the way, Michael, one correction from a caller who says the phone in the new Hillary Clinton ad is white, not red. So the campaigns are moving on.
That's good to hear.
Michael Powell from the New York Times, WNYC political director, Andrea Bernstein, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ron.
And just a quick reminder to everyone that Andrea and I are extending our weekly podcast, Digesting Politics. Until the Democrats have a nominee, we'll be recording a new one this afternoon. This is a web-only feature that you won't hear on the radio. You can sign up for the Digesting Politics podcast for free at WNYC.org.